You know what? Good for the chickens.
We got the land. It's not like we're short on blank spaces. And they're chooks.
Like, they're fucking chickens. Like, they eat seed.
They eat like, anything.
You raise them in the desert, don't we?
Yeah. Just throw some shit out. They'll eat it. Don't worry. They eat everything. They can eat funnelweb spiders and not be affected. That's how strong their guts are.
Apparently just people are unique.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 191 of the Player 2 Pixelcast. My name is Matt Houston and I'm hosting the episode this week. It is a two-man show. It's just the old hands in house, and that other old hand is of course none other than Tim Henderson. How are you, Tim?
I'm okay. My pop filter fell off my microphone. I'm going to blame that if I sound like garbage, and it's definitely not because I'm incompetent or anything like
that. Or eating cheese, as the case may be.
I'm going to put the cheese aside until the break. I'll still sip on the beer.
That's fine. Tonight, we're going to have a look at the state of the industry, because there's been a whole shitload happen in the last couple of months. A lot of it's really bad. There has been some, you know, little glimmers in amongst it, and we kind of want to point those out as well as talk about the bad shit, because that's inevitable. But in the meantime, we're going to talk about the games we have been playing, and Tim has been journeying down a 2D pixel art side-scrolling beat-em-up platformer thingy.
Yeah, I'd call it very much, I guess, another world-like or a flashback-like.
Yeah.
Because I have now halfway through this beer, I've now forgotten the term that I usually describe this particular type of side-scroller. I played a bunch of them last year. 2D is not quite right. Like, it's done a very good, like, it plays 2D.
Mm.
But, I mean, all the visuals, you've played a little bit yourself, I think. They're like, they do actually have camera sweeps and things, so everything is mostly built in 3D. The gaming question is just called replaced. And fucking stunning to look at. Like, I need to get that out of the way. Right? Like, this is a gorgeous, gorgeous game. It's one of those, like, proof that we are at the point now where, like, to look stunning, like, style is more important.
Yep.
Because this just has, like, this kind of, like, deep, high contrast, cyberpunk, pixelated but not too much kind of look. Suffers a little bit from the... Okay, so I personally have some cross-save issues, which mean that I'm, like, stuck playing this on a handheld. Mixed game for that specific thing. I mean, I had to come to terms with, like, not doing things the way I usually do. I tried it. Like, if certain settings are set away, then I think this is how the devs want it to be. I will generally try to leave those untouched.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, though, one of those is, like, super widescreen black bars on a 6-point-whatever-inch screen that the ROG LAX is. I eventually turned that off.
Which is fair.
But yeah, I imagine if you've got this like on a 65-inch, which is always the standard now TV, that like that is going to be a sight to behold, and I wish I could do it. But again, cross save. But I know you say you're like really positive. I've been like a bit up and down. Like
I've played like 2.5 hours, I think, about that. I just haven't got back to it. I really enjoyed what I really like the flow of the combat, especially.
I actually do enjoy the brawling to a certain. I feel like the audio is a mistrick there. Like, I know it's going for this kind of, like, low hum, but it could really use some, like, proper thwacks.
Yeah,
I think.
Fair.
Like, the combat's, like, weirdly silent. And that kind of leads to, I think... And this is almost, like, kind of... Almost in service. So you could argue if you really wanted to, if you're, like, just the world's biggest fanboy, that this is kind of, like, in honor of Another World and all of those games that came after, where like it's just a lack of feedback information is kind of, I think, as I've gone through this, an increasing problem with this game. I mean, Capcom has come out and defended like the yellow paint and everything because it works. This does kind of do the yellow paint, but like they subdue it to such a like they are so precious about how this game looks, and to a certain degree, deserve, like I cannot emphasize enough how fucking good this game looks. Like they should just turn this into a movie, honestly. I would absolutely watch 90 or 100 minutes of something animated in this engine. Like, just no questions. Like, they could absolutely do it. It might be a niche thing, but I would be part of that niche. But yeah, so things like that, like, they just kind of, they don't want to fuck with the visual design to the degree, like, the readability becomes, like, a frequent issue. You're right, though, that the combat, which is actually pretty cool. Like, it's kind of, it's counter-based, but not too much. Is because
we are now in the decade
of parries, I think is the way we're going to.
Yes, we are.
It does, I want to say suffer, but not really suffer. This is a concession of playability where, like, okay, you got to kill 20 dudes, but 15 of them are going to stand in the background cheering like they're the background in a Street Fighter 2 match while you beat up the first five, and then eventually, like, some are going to come in. But yeah, the basic conceit is that you're kind of almost a rogue AI who's kind of, like, escaped in the brain of a scientist, and you've, in this dystopian future, and you've, like, left the walls of the city, and you're basically trying to get your way back, and you're discovering these kind of underground communities. Again, pretty cool aesthetics, and some, like, it does remind me of, like, those early cyberpunk anime. If anybody remembers, like, the manga video label, like, back in the VHS days, like, it definitely catches that, to the point where, like, one of the main guys you meet, there's eventually, like, a city hub, and, like, you kind of got this rebellious youth that you, like, it's kind of like this kind of cyberpunk rocker. And I just noticed, like, a little poster on the back of his, like, wall that says Rose and Gun. You know, kind of getting around a very un-rock and roll, like, certain litigiousness.
Yes.
Of what were once one of the greatest hair metal bands of all time.
Yes.
But yeah, the easy description of this is, like, it's a more modern flashback.
That's fair, or another world.
Planet of Lana, I guess, would be one of the more on the top of the head, like, examples.
Yep.
So it gets away to a certain degree with, like, the mechanical fovery of this. The thing that I think is getting me is, like, just the lack of, I think they could have done better with the audio. I kind of appreciate, like, the low hums and things, but, like, it's just not, it's one of those things, like, when the audio in this degree is working well, you don't even notice it's happening. But when it's absent, it's like, oh, I feel like I'm missing a certain layer of information.
Yeah.
I'm really bothered by, bothered's the wrong word. I just don't think that the dialogue is very well written.
Yeah, I did notice that. If after my 2.5 hours, my biggest complaint about it would be the writing of the dialogue. It's very,
which is a shame because the premise is interesting. The world seems cool, but, like, it almost, like, feels really unfair. It's like you've got, like, an awesome steak and then somebody's just put a really shitty sauce on it or something.
Yeah,
like
they put ketchup, like, on it.
Sure, you got this perfect medium rare.
Yeah. Some dickheads, like, put tomato Kobe sauce on it.
Matsusaka, and then someone's just gone the ketchup and just gone.
Yeah.
So yeah, I am up and down on this. I'll probably keep on playing it. I'd much more likely be able to finish it if I weren't having cloud save issues. Because the small screen does not really do this one any favors. But, like, just such a stunning looking game. Like, you can see why the trailers hit home so hard. Like, this game presents very, very well. And it does scratch a certain itch. But, like, I did play a few things in this vein last year. The original Planet of Lana actually being one of them. And I would say, based on that, and Far Ocean something as well. There are a couple of games called Far. I think it's an acronym. Yeah, an acronym for something.
Yeah.
There are no examples that present as well as this. Like, it just looks so fucking good. Like, I cannot overstate how stunning it is. But I would honestly give it a go if it's on a subscription service you've got, but
yeah,
I can see why, like, people were excited to try it and it's kind of, like, dropped off the radar. Like, it's, like, just kind of, like, missed some, like, that, like, final layers of refinement or, like, actual
testing.
Yeah,
it had the potential to be that big indie breakout hit, but just never quite.
Yeah, it just needed, like, one more pass, or, like, somebody needed to come in as an editor and say, you need to tighten this up, or you need to cut this section out.
Yeah.
If that's your thing, I kind of want to say get Planet of Lana. I haven't played the second one, but I imagine that's probably, well, the first one's, I think the first one is still excellent, and it's probably very, very cheap. I would lean in that direction. If the aesthetic is that much of a pull for you, I cannot blame you. Two, I guess my call is wait for a sale.
Yeah. And I'm sure it will be on sale soon.
Almost everything is gonna. Yeah, it's not a Nintendo game. It's not a Nintendo game. It doesn't have Call of Duty in the title.
Yeah, it'll be on sale soon. Well, what I've been playing has been really exciting for me because I'm a whopping big nerd, and we talked a bit about turn-based games last podcast, but I've been playing Star Wars Zero Company. I had a...
Just insert, like, Tamsin kind of screaming in frustration from the other side of Crembian right now. Like,
I've been, lucky enough to have a... like, it's like a 10-hour preview they gave us, like, that I could play at home. And so it's been fantastic. I have no hesitation in saying this is the game the XCOM fans have been looking for since XCOM 2, really. And you can taste that DNA because it's made by a whole bunch of the XCOM devs, X4Axis devs that worked on both XCOM 2 and Midnight Suns. And the game absolutely feels like it's taken bits from both of those titles. And it's coming out really, really well. Like, I really hate to do ultra positive previews, and it's very easy to do.
Dude, that was just like super negative. You can have it.
You know, but I've finished my written preview and it's super positive, and I just can't find anything to pick on it from a guy that likes turn-based tactics games. If you are the person that hates that, this is not a game that's going to win you over, no matter how big a Star Wars fan you are. But if you can get behind the turn-based tactics, or if you're new to it, and Star Wars is your entryway, then by all means, give it a try, because I think it has, like, its easy difficulty is definitely very welcoming. Its normal difficulty is probably slightly easier than XCOM's normal difficulty. So I think it's purposefully a bit easier to grasp for newies, because there will be kind of this interest associated with the Star Wars license.
Star Wars, so you can't assume that.
You can't assume that everyone's played a tactic. If you see an XCOM game, you can assume pretty much that people know what they're getting into. With this, they may not. So, really, really cool unit design, special abilities, the way the combat works together. They've brought in the Midnight Suns kind of interactive environment elements where you can kind of shoulder charge someone into an explosive barrel and, you know, that sort of thing, which is awesome. It's set in the Clone Wars era, so you can set up ambushes and shoot the stupid battle droids.
There's going to be a lot of robots then.
And they're hilarious because, like, you'll see a little symbol on the map saying reinforcements are coming. So if you're quick enough, you can set your team up in front of that reinforcement area and have Overwatch on all of them and just wipe out a whole squadron of battle droids that come in, and because they only take one hit. The basic battle droids only take one hit. And so you can just wipe out the whole lot of them. It's really fun. But there's plenty of other enemies that are much tougher. There's this cult that you're kind of investigating. So the premise is you're a mercenary company that's been hired by the Republic to investigate this cult that is kind of helping the Separatist army, and they're doing some odd shit with the Force. And yeah, that's basically the premise. You're kind of owe money to the Hutts, so you take the job to pay off your debts, and there's this cool meta
that old
going
chestnut.
On. Sorry?
That old chestnut.
That
I
old
owe
chestnut.
Money to a Hutt, gotta pay it back somehow.
Gotta pay it back, because I don't want to end up in carbonite, frozen carbonite. But there's these cool kind of there's two kind of main, I guess, resources that you use in the meta of the game, so the outside of the combat. There's intel, and then there's money, and money's obvious. It's for upgrading your base. It's for upgrading weapons. It's for, you know, buying things. Whereas the intel you can use to launch intel-related missions. And now these missions you don't actually participate in. You can send, you know, some of your crew off to do them. You'll get resources. You'll open up new active side missions. You'll create different branching stories. So in this 10 hours, I noticed there was probably 6 or 7 times where I did an intel mission that was not compulsory. Like, you don't have to do these things, and you may miss
them. Hours.
Sorry?
Within just 10 hours.
You don't have to do them, and you may even miss them because they're all on a timer. So you've got a certain amount you can do before the day ticks over, and then you'll lose access to some of them. So you don't know which ones are going to play out and how they're going to play out. So it's creating this kind of really interesting replayability vibe. And some of them really do change the way the story progresses, which is very cool. Like, I'm
like
very
a lot
interested.
Of work, actually, if they're like optional missions as well.
They're optional. Yep. So there are key, obvious story-based missions, but these optional ones, they can come about from talking to a crew member, from doing an intel mission, from, you know, and they just pop up and they are not necessarily, but they do absolutely add to the overall story, and they can create different pathways and different upgrade pathways as well to you, for your units. So it's going to be really cool to explore this. This is a game that's going to be, and I think they've made that with that XCOM mentality in mind, because people that play XCOM, they play through it once, they probably get three quarters of the way through, they're dead, they wipe it all, and they start again. Because they haven't, that's just how that game works. You know, a lot of it is learning for the first playthrough, and then the second playthrough is when you get good. So I feel like they're setting that up to make that second playthrough even more appealing to players. So, yeah, I really can't find a fault from a tactics standpoint at this point in time. Look, they may come about in, as you know, you get to the 50, 60, 70 hour mark, which these games often go to.
Possibly, but I guess like on that, like two things.
Yeah.
One, I do pretty much ever since I started writing about video games in any sort of professional capacity.
Mm.
Like I think the second feature I ever wrote for Hyper, I was reading, it was about the rise of indie games, which is the most on the pulse I've ever been. This is back in 2006. Like fucking hell, man, I had it. But I remember like reading this one like presentation of advice, and it was like a keynote. It's like previews. Oh, the go for previews more than reviews. Previews are universally positive almost.
Yes.
And like that kind of put me on a like approach to that. But a few years later, fast forward to me living in Japan, going to Tokyo Game Show once, back when Australia had excellent EA representatives as well, for that matter. Good shout out to like the 2012-ish era old guard there. Previewing Titanfall 2.
Yep.
And it was just like the whole demo was like a multiplayer thing. But I remember asking one of the two devs in there about the single player. And he like looked at me like dead serious and said, I think this is the single player I've been waiting my entire life to make. And I remember thinking, all right, I'm going to write that down and everything. But yeah, like this is just PR training spin. It wasn't like campaign is fucking excellent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I mean, to give press like myself 10 hours of gameplay for a preview.
10 is like, pretty generous.
That's speaking confidently, right? That's people that are pretty confident they've got something good here.
The other thing is, like, I think, mate, it's probably just luck. But, like, for a kind of a niche game that timed themselves very well, like, going into September.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess it's technically Fire Emblem as well, but that's, like, a Switch exclusive. Yep. But there's going to be so much noise, and, like, the fact that this is going to speak to such a specific crowd is probably, in this case, doing them a favor.
I think so too. And I think, I mean, Star Wars carries its own, you know, cachet, right? Even though Disney has oversaturated the shit out of it at this point in time, it still holds a special place for a lot of people. So it's going to get eyeballs from that. It's going to get eyeballs from people that have been dying for a new XCOM game since XCOM 2, and that's a very long time ago at this point.
It is, isn't it? Holy crap.
And it's definitely more XCOM than Midnight Suns. There are bits and pieces of Midnight Suns in there, don't get me wrong, but it is very much XCOM-based. And it's not reinventing the wheel as such. I will say that. That's probably the only slide I can put on it so far, is there's no grand new feature that I've never seen before. Like, there's a lot of evolutions and refinements, but there's nothing that's, like, groundbreaking in this genre here. But
I mean, considering that I think I personally know, like, half the people who ever got into Midnight Suns.
Yeah.
reusing that wheel seems like a fair game at this point.
Yeah. I mean, so they're really just refining that and hammering it, and yeah, it's shaping up really well. I am super positive. I mean, this was always going to be my jam. Like, I think that's fair to say. But even with my high expectations, I feel like they're probably going to jump over them. So, yeah.
Cool. It's nice to have a fun note to go on.
It is. It is. It really is. And it's nice to see a really cool Star Wars game coming out, because apparently Galactic Race is very good too, from everything I've heard. So, yeah, a couple of good Star Wars games to look forward to. On that note, on a positive note, we're going to have a break. We're going to get a drink.
Breaks are good.
And then we're going to probably talk about some bad shit. because that's what the industry's
hopefully
like
not
at
too
the moment.
Much though. We've already had two episodes this year of like everything is
yes, yes, and I did want to focus on the positive stuff, so hopefully we can find some after the break.
Silver lining.
And we're back. We are refreshed and ready to talk the good, the bad, and the pretty fucking ugly of what's happened in the past few months in video games. And, you know, we've done a few of these state of the industries, and it seems to keep getting worse somehow. But we have seen some kind of cool things come out of the ashes to some degree. But that, I guess we need to talk about what caused the ashes. The two biggest things, I guess, that have dominated headlines is Microsoft's reset of Xbox, which entails sacking thousands of people and, you know, selling off different development studios. And then Sony's canning of physical media just 2 weeks after they deleted a whole bunch of movies off people's libraries that they no longer held digital licenses for. So, you know, they've really dominated headlines, and it doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon, especially this. I mean, I think people are kind of numb to Xbox, well, Microsoft especially, doing nasty shit, but the Sony thing just keeps rolling on, doesn't it, Tim?
It's at the point where, like, I feel like Rob and I may have covered this like a couple of episodes ago, and I'm just kind of losing track.
Yeah.
Part of the reason I agreed to this, I thought we were going to like try and find a more positive spin.
We are. I
one
promise
for my
we will
soul, and two because we have talked a lot about already about like how bad. Yeah, it's the thing that actually upsets me more than anything is like, okay, I am actually upset about the disc shit that Sony's doing on the digital ownership, whatever. But it is like the least important thing of like all of the fucking nightmares.
It really is. It really is. And for me, I think the Microsoft stuff's the stuff that obviously is the nastiest, and I've really made this separation in my own head between Microsoft and Xbox now, and I include the CEOs of Xbox as the Microsoft side of things, and then Xbox is just the developers,
it's a coping mechanism at this point, it literally is
a coping mechanism, because I, as someone that loves games and someone that loves the work that a lot of these people do, it's in my soul to want to support these guys, right? But I have no time for the fucking corporate shit that has brought us to this point, and some clear, obvious signs that this was coming around the corner. That's obviously from bad decisions by CEOs who take no responsibility and suffer no consequences while everyone else has to pick up the bill, right? That's the shit that, oh, God, it makes me angry. It really does. Whereas I want to see id make great games. They make fantastic games. I want to see Bethesda make great games. I want Arkane back in making great games. You know, all these Double Fine like got history beyond most development studios, you know. And I guess this is where we get to the silver lining part of things. And obviously there's a bit of pain to begin with these companies, especially the five that found separation. They've had to cop a bit of pain and obviously lose a few people just to survive. But it's my sincere hope now that they've gained their independence. And what I've seen happening a little bit already with things like Expedition 33 and stuff like that is the old developer publisher model seems to be coming back a little bit. And it's my sincere hope that it does, that in that these development studios, obviously they have to spend time and effort in finding a publisher, but they retain their independence. And so it allows them to at least find a publisher to match the game, or, you know, a publisher willing to help them out, get across the line. And I hope that's where we get to with these studios. It's my sincere hope that, you know, Double Fine can go to a studio and go, hey, this is our next product, next to a publisher, and this is our next product, and whoever it may be, play on. Even Ubisoft have started dabbling in this model now with things like a couple of indie games and a few other things. They've started dabbling again. So, you know, if these companies that don't want the risk of spending money on a massive game, they can move back to the publishing model. I think the industry will almost, I won't say right itself, but head in the right direction. I think where shareholders are involved in development is the biggest problem.
And yeah, somehow I think you're still more optimistic than I am.
Possibly.
But the problem I understand is like just a lot of the funding just isn't there.
Yeah.
Because there's a bunch of like basically free money, like just interest-free loans and shit like going around during COVID that like then created this
unsustainable
this kind of brain disease of infinite growth, which by definition has to end somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, it has to end somewhere. And but
I think that's what I mean by shareholders' involvement, because shareholders expect growth. Yeah. Not profit, growth. And that's a different thing, right?
And it is, and it's problematic, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to articulate this properly. But yeah, so obviously, like, COVID happened. People were stuck inside, started buying video games. Anybody could understand that this is a bubble, and you understand that we are going to make bank, but it's going to be limited to the time in this bubble. And like a normal person, say, like, let's say, for whatever reason, the work that I do, like, there's an expiration waiting in the deadline, but I say, oh shit, I'm going to be like five times as much money as I usually do for the next year. But I know in about a year it's going to end.
Yeah.
As a not CEO of Electronic Arts or fucking whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy myself a nice new TV for the house, but most of that money I'm going to like squirrel away for a rainy day.
Yep.
I'm not going to assume that extra, but like the whole industry acted like that extra money was just going to keep them raining down.
Yeah.
Which it clearly didn't. And like the problem, like the supply chain problems, like this whole generation, like supply chain started with like COVID, nobody could buy a PS5 or a Series X. Then got like mixed up with like, crypto NFTs, like causes like crazy the shit happening card. With like graphics cards.
Yeah.
Just were not sensibly accessible for literally good, years, I think.
Yeah, I think it was a good 18 months, yeah.
And now AI is destroying everything.
Yeah, memory and hard drives.
And that's like a twofold problem. Like one, like nobody can afford RAM.
No.
Sony is not in a position to negotiate for RAM. Microsoft, weirdly, despite it being partly their fault, is not in a position to negotiate RAM for a new console. Like Valve, we think of Valve as this juggernaut, and within their own space they are, but they are like fucking tiny in the like, we are trying to get RAM for our little, I'm pretty convinced of the Steam machine.
Yeah.
Had they not announced it already, they just would have put that in the back burner.
I have a feeling that's possibly what would have happened because, you know, processors aren't really changing in price at the moment.
Yeah. But on top of that, this is why we're like, everyone's talking about $1,000 PlayStation 6. And when we say $1,000, we're talking in US currency as well. Yeah. Like Australia's been down this road before, but we're talking $1,000 US. Then you have exchange rates and then Australia tax or the rest of the world tax because for whatever reason, the US, you know, I'll take it. They have like the worst healthcare system in the developed world.
Yeah, yeah.
The rest, if we have to pay a couple $100 more for a TV, yeah, we might have Pauline Hanson. It may not get much better.
She's not getting in. She's not getting
in. Yeah, bad thing about that. But the point is, I think a lot of the money that would have been invested into video games is also being invested into data centers.
Yeah.
And
that's like grift that keeps on grifting until it explodes.
Well, this is the internal, like, it needs to keep on growing. And, like, there are people smarter or more educated about this than me that keep talking about it. Like, this is, like, part of the problem is, like, Google, how can Google possibly keep on growing when they, you know, their market share is 90-something percent
yeah.
of everything they do? And, like, this is the next thing.
Yeah.
And it's because it's not turning profit. It's like making it look like your shares are worth more. Like a year from now, like if you keep them growing, that is what drives share value.
Yeah, yeah.
And so from everywhere I've looked, there's like the amount of money being spent on AI is unrecoverable.
Yep. Yeah, the crash is coming. I think it's pretty well established by everyone that there's going to be a crash in some point. And I think, and I've had this conversation with a few people that don't really understand AI, you know, in my life, like people that are, you know, my parents and people of that sort of ilk that don't really get the damage that AI can do. And I've said to them, I said, the crash is coming and whatever comes out of the ashes of that crash is what AI will be. Good, bad, or either way, whatever comes out of the...
My guess is like chatbots are going to be whatever you can run locally on your computer.
Yep.
These data centers are just going to become deserts of useless graphics cards. Yep. Like that's one of the things that like really fucks. Like the weird thing is like fucking graphics cards. Yeah. Graphics cards are at the center of all. This should be gaming's like biggest moment. Yep. But all of the NVIDIA silicon, probably I'm assuming because it would be stupid to include it, does not have HDMI or video ports in.
Probably not. I suspect that what gaming may benefit from these data centers in the end because it may be the point that cloud gaming becomes feasible, and these data centers get used for that. Or as some of them anyway.
You know. My more altruistic hope is that like somehow they're able to be used for research. But
Yeah, obviously.
I don't actually understand. All I know is that it's a lot of compute. I do not understand the ins and outs, but it's a fuck ton of CPU power.
Yeah.
The reason these things work is just literally brute force.
It is. It is. And refinements haven't been forced to be made because there's no restrictions on these people making them.
Only company making any money in this is NVIDIA.
Yep. Pretty much. And they're funding.
And Samsung and everybody who's like now benefiting from like RAM being hyper-intensive as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's almost like the oil thing. But yeah.
Point is like this is all like, it's just like, it feels like the video game's fate is like kind of tied to this, like to a certain degree.
It does. It does. The costs. I think what's going to happen, and I think, and I've had this joke, it's semi-joking, but I think PC gaming's almost going to become the affordable option compared to the consoles because of a couple of things. This instant pricing, the obviously pricing of hardware. So when eventually what will happen is the supply chain will either catch up to demand because companies will build to catch up to the demand, or AI will crash and the demand won't be there anymore. So they're the two things that'll go happen eventually.
Entertains me. Both will happen, and that's going to just result in like, now we just have too much RAM, and it's going to be this very, very weird scenario.
It will be. And what will happen, though, at that point is Microsoft and Sony, and to a lesser degree, Valve and Nintendo, will have paid for RAM at whatever price they got it at. They will be locked in for a certain period for a certain
amount
of RAM.
For a year or two. And I'm going to say only a year or two because, like,
they do iterations.
They were locked in for a generation. Yeah. The PS5 would be fine. The Series X would be fine.
Yeah.
Because they would have guaranteed. Clearly, like, the...
Yeah, they're locked
Sony
in for a
Sony does
year
not
or
want
something.
To include the price of the PS5 because they want to sell more PS5s. Yep. They want to keep a certain margin on it.
But I think this RAM excess and obviously graphic card and everything that goes along the hard drives is going to lead to some very competitive pricing on the PC side of things. And that goes along with this increased demand for handheld gaming, which means developers are actually putting a lot of effort into optimizing their games for lower spec hardware. So.
I actually think we maybe mostly have the Steam Deck to thank for that.
Like we
that,
do. We
going
really
forward
do.
Is like that is a target spec now. And it's because like I do think Valve was sincerely looking to make a Steam Deck 2. And in a normal time frame, next year might be the year they announce it.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
Not at
anymore.
The moment. No.
Steam
no.
Deck. In fact, I think like we're at the point now where like isn't Microsoft like trying to like reduce the RAM requirements for Windows?
Yep. I think a lot of that the silver lining for this whole RAM apocalypse will be, I think optimization is going to become key. And I think software development in general, not just games, will really focus
your
on
video
optimization.
Editing software actually has to like stop just assuming you're going to get an extra 2 gigabytes in your next.
Yeah. And so it's, and along with handheld gaming and things like that, I think optimization is going to become a priority for companies, for developers of games and software. And I think that's going to lead to a more stable gaming environment eventually.
And the thing I'm looking forward to, and I, yeah. use words looking forward to perhaps a bit glibly there, because most of this is bad. Like, bad things are going to happen. People's retirement funds are going to get, like, fucked up. Naive investors are going to get screwed over. Some people who were in on the grift earlier are going to make off very, very well. Nothing is going to happen to Sam Altman.
Nope.
That lawsuit where he's like, literally his sister is accusing him of multiple years of sexual abuse. That's just going to get cast under the rug.
How many has Elon got away with at this point?
So, well, yeah. But the idea that, like, because the main issue I've had with this generation is it's taken, it's maybe 2 years now that the PS5 Series X have been actually operating on their own terms.
Yeah, I think so.
So the idea that we could actually get the most out of this hardware kind of excites me a little bit.
Honestly, if I was Microsoft and Sony, I'd, you know, and I say this from a point of ignorance, I admit that. I don't know.
The thing is, the R&D costs, I think, are like so astronomical that it has created this legitimate pickle.
You know, I would hold off on any new system for an extra year at least. So if they had planned to announce next year, I'd hold it off for a year to announce just to see what happens. Because it's probably not going to get worse. It's more likely to get better, at least be foreseeably better.
The RAM situation is expected to last for at least until 2028.
Yes. So,
assuming things don't burst first, and that's like the unpredictable thing. At some point,
it will burst.
OpenAI is going to go broke. Like it strikes me as inevitable, and that's. But we don't know when it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, if I was running those companies, I'd be holding off. It's a bit like Steam with the Steam Deck 2 and perhaps any other hardware they've got cooking. I think releasing in this environment is just, you're releasing to 5%. That's it, 5% of gamers. We had that massive problem where people didn't upgrade last gen for PS4s and Xbox Ones. They took forever to upgrade. It's going to be worse this time around.
Yeah, twofold problem. Like, one, I was saying at this point, like in 2019, I was saying, like, it feels a year too early for the PS5 then. Yep. It feels way more early now. Like,
and that's not necessarily a time thing. It's the state of the world thing, you know?
It is. I mean, it was a pandemic last time.
Yeah.
Well, one, like, this is the first time we'd had a mid-console refresh where I was like, okay. Some people have PS4s and Xbox One Xs.
Fuck, whatever Microsoft, the fuck.
Get your name and shit together. like, this stuff can definitely... It's just the hard drives that are, like, kind of cranking, but, like, these things could have gone on for another year without being replaced. And they didn't need to force that during the pandemic. But they did, which is why I think that Sony and Microsoft are probably still going to try and muscle ahead. More or less, they might delay half a year, but we're not going to...
I do worry about it. Because I want as much as I hate the decisions that the corporation side of things make in view of exponential growth, I want these consoles to succeed because I like games and I want the people that make games to be able to make games. And I want
the consoles to be affordable. Because, like, that's the thing. And I've said this in a couple of episodes this year already. And I've noticed, like, with Japanese kids, that Square has missed an entire generation on Dragon's Quest. It's been like that long. They've literally missed a generation.
Yeah.
And like, kids, like, the thing is, like, if PlayStation 5 is now 50% more expensive than it was when it launched, it's not going to find its way under a Christmas tree for the most part. No. Switch 2 might, but you're now competing with the fact that, like, smartphones are so ingrained in society that, like, everybody has a hand-me-down one to give to the kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're, like, literally competing against hand-me-downs.
Yeah. And I just don't know that you're hitting those price marks where it becomes the elites are the only ones that are playing games, and that's not going to cover the cost of a $100 billion, $100 million game development, is it?
It's not. And that, again, that's an enthusiast audience that already knows they want it, so they're getting old. Like, we are getting older.
Yeah. We really are. Like,
I will buy a... Actually, I want to say I would buy a PS6. If that thing does come out, if Sony forces that thing out, it comes out $1,000 American, probably like 150,000 yen.
Yep.
I may like, I was lucky. I bought my PC like a month before RAM started going crazy. Like, I threw my hands up. Yeah, I'm going to like just pass until it becomes reasonable.
Yeah. And I think you're definitely not going to be the only one, and it's going to be very interesting.
That's the problem. Like, if like the initial wave, like the launch will sell out. Yeah, there'll be enough people who are like nuts enough, but and like the great like first review, like everybody's wrong, and then half a year later, these things are just going to be sitting on short shelves.
Yep. Because it's just going to be too much for people. And in the cost of living crisis, which Australia is absolutely in, I'm not sure about Japan, but Australia is 100% in a cost of living crisis.
Japan has the inflation for like the first time since the 80s, at least, I think, in the last 5 years. Like,
it's not great over here with the cost of petrol and food and everything going. You know, petrol's really bad, and so that's pushed everything else up, and then interest rates go up, and so cost of living goes up, and it becomes a very vicious cycle. The things that get missed first are entertainment. So anything that provides entertainment, that's the first
hobbies,
thing that goes.
Like, well, specifically,
you can suck up the old hand-me-down
smartphone. It's like, no, you already have that Android that I bought five years ago.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need a new PlayStation. You got the old one that's still working down there. So that's where we're at. And I think there's that. The people that should be on the chopping block aren't. The RAM situation is terrible. hardware prices are terrible. And that's all led to this environment that, you know, a lot of people like us that have, you know, their fingers reasonably on the pulse of gaming are so depressed about the future.
It sucks to, like, be aware of all of this stuff. Yeah, know what's happening. And like there's going to be, September at... September's going to be a fun month as a gamer.
Yeah, but it will be.
It's going to be a wake up, because that's normally when Apple announces the new iPhones.
Yeah.
It's going to be a wake-up call, I think, for a lot of the population at large.
Yeah, I think, you know, the new Samsung, Apple, and Google phones are all going to be, you know,
$1,000 more expensive.
Yeah. It's going to be crazy, and people are going to go, what the fuck? It's going to be an interesting time when the general populace kind of catches on to what's happening here. But I did want to talk positive. So there's a really nice news story came out about Devolver Digital, which is, you know, they've always marched to the
Devolver's
beat of their
cool.
own drum.
I like Devolver.
Always marched to the beat of their
own
drum.
Not entirely my jam, but I do respect them, and they choose their published titles well within their identity.
And so what they've done is they've actually left the stock market and the original owners have bought it back. And the reason is because they feel that the pressures of exponential growth is not conducive to the artistic endeavors that they take part in, which, God fucking bless them, it's true. You know, and you know, it's not like they're not making money. They're making money.
So, like, they're profitable. I guess.
They're not.
They're
let's
doing
just
fine.
Say they've got swimming pools and they got nice cars. Don't worry about that. They're just not growing at 1,000,000% every year, which is what shareholders demand. So this is my big hope that other companies in that mid-tier publishing area or that sort of thing, maybe look at some sort of option of way of doing that sort of thing.
I'm going to grim you right back down to earth though. And like,
there's not many that are probably able to.
Like, there's a other end of the same thing as like EA bought out by the, that's going to be human rights violations, like just waiting to happen there.
It is.
Gamergate is finally going to get the Mass Effect that they have dreamed of.
No, it's not, because they're looking at selling BioWare.
Well, doesn't get any better.
Yeah.
Point is, you're not going to get a very diverse Mass Effect, is what I'm saying.
No. That'll be very interesting to see play out. But
it was cool that Double Fine got to go free, but also they were bought in under Phil Spencer, and I think he was sincere when he said, all right, we just need you guys to, like, add some flavor to Game Pass, like, be creative, do your thing. But management changes, the mandate changes, they were smart enough to not kill them, because can you imagine the PR nightmare if you shut down Tim Schafer? But Double Fine has had to still sack, like, a couple of dozen people,
yes,
I think.
Yes, they have. And like I said before, there is a hit to these studios that have had to go solo initially. I hope that it's a temporary hit and they get a new project.
I think Tim Schafer is not excited about the idea of having to, like, go shopping around.
He didn't like ideas that before. No.
It did not seem like it was ever his favorite thing.
No.
It's not
just
my
like
favorite
making
thing. I can hardly relate, to be fair.
Oh, and I think that's where maybe these companies maybe have to spend a dollar or two in hiring specialists at that. in an increasingly specialized workforce that
video games door-to-door salesman who's like,
well, you know, someone that knows how to speak corporate bullshit, you know, and can do that shopping around, you know, a salesman. You need a salesman on your team. As much as you generally, most people look down at used car salesmen and stuff like that, they do have talents that are unique to their role. So I think maybe that's what, you know, you want a CEO, you want a chief developer, and you want a salesman in every studio, you know. They'll become three key positions.
Somebody who's able to work a room, I think. Like,
yeah, yeah. Someone, that can sell their
guy or gal on your team who's
that
like,
can, yeah, sell the soul. Oh, well, not soul, but you know, sell the product to
who
investors
can
or
put the
publishers.
Required spin on the idea.
Yeah, yeah, and I hope, and that's my hope, that these now independent companies quickly get funding, which it probably won't happen, but I hope. There are a lot of people with money out there. Like,
they're,
I think,
dumping
people
it all into data centers.
I think there's a lot of silent people with money out there, and I'm pretty sure the facts back this up. There's a lot of silent people with not Bezos and fucking Elon level money, but money, right? Money enough to fund a game, and they're quiet. They don't buy into the hype, and I it's my hope that people like that are the ones looking to fund the arts in some way, shape, or form.
It would be very happy if, like, some retired NBA players who are drastically overpaid as it is, just say, you know, I'm going to spend my tens of millions of dollars, like, funding the sequel to this game I liked when I was 20.
You know, that sort of stuff is what I hope comes out of this. And they see that, you know, hey, a game may not make a $1 billion profit, but it does make profit. So it's still a smart investment, right? Profit is profit. I don't understand this need for exorbitant profit, except from a shareholder's perspective where they demand more and more.
When the corporation is big enough, is the fact that, like, well, we have $5 million to invest, and we can invest in this thing that would make $7 million. We can invest in this thing that will make $20 million. It doesn't matter what the creative juice is.
Yeah.
They're going to go the $20
million. Yeah.
I guess my happy thing is, like, fucking Count Binface. Yeah, we're going to bring British politics into this.
Yeah.
So he's become my favorite political character ever.
Yeah.
Like, one, because probably not going to win, but it's still, like, he's also kind of going to win because he's going to get more votes than he should.
Yep.
Against Nigel Farage. This is the guy responsible for fucking Brexit.
Yep.
So humiliating him, one. Two, his manifesto now includes demanding Sega makes Shenmue 4.
Yeah, I did see that. I thought of you.
Never mind that, like, this is really something he needs to get with YSNet with Ryu Suzuki. I don't think, like, Sega have an understanding with him now. Like, he needs to figure out the details there. Boy, yeah. I just fucking love that, like, that made it on there. And also that they opened the arcade in Trocadero, London. Like, point out, I worked in fucking Trocadero for 3 years. This guy's my personal hero. End fascism. Make Shenmue 4. Trocadero's gone to shit. Bring Trocadero back to its former glory.
Do you have a long lost brother or something? That's
oh man, it's just a comedian from the BBC, I think. Like,
yeah,
there's this whole like hard right radio thing trying to do an expose saying this is who he really is, and like it's like, yeah, it's not a secret.
No,
like,
no, he's not Banksy.
He's not fucking Clark Kent. Like, yeah. It's like quite like people know who he actually is. Yeah. It's just when he runs for elections, he puts a bin on his head.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's fair because all politicians are trash. So. The great Billy Connolly once said, the desire to become a politician should automatically preclude you from becoming a politician.
Okay, but here's the irony thing. I know we're having fun here, and yep. I only got to bring it up because of Shenmue 4. And I just fucking love that Shenmue 4 of all the fucking things. Like, it's such a specifically excellent thing to add to the list.
Yeah.
If he somehow wins, I actually think he would do it and probably actually do a pretty good job.
Yeah. I think the best politician in Australia is David Pocock at the moment, who's an ex-rugby player, and he seems to just talk sense, and that's all you have to do to seem good in politics, really, is just
and talk sense. Ban the word gutful from Australian political discourse. We're getting slightly distracted here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I think we might end it there, but, you know, we've had a couple of positives. We've had a lot of negatives. It's unfortunately our kind of responsibility to talk about this stuff at some point. And it was eating at me that I felt we needed to. But I do hope, I mean, I have nothing but hope that these people that are suffering at the moment in the industry and that find their feet as soon as possible. It's a shit show out there. So
I do think I would love to be more positive, but I do think we've just lost a lot of talent for good. They're going to find other jobs that are going to be more stable.
I do. I think it's like writing.
This industry is just kind of siphoned off passion from people for such a long time.
Yep. And it's much like our games media industry, you know. You've lost
talent. The same passion thing as well. I forgot what magazine it was like I was reading about, like the history of, like, they had this, it was one of the UK ones.
Yeah.
And apparently it was like selling like double the numbers of the car magazines, but they're getting paid half as much and not getting anywhere near the royal treatment.
Yeah.
And it's like, and this idea is like, well, you're fucking lucky you get to write about video games. Like,
yep.
We just squeeze you for passion. We know that, like, you're excitable enough to be doing this. And I've been there, like, fucking.
Yes. Yeah. I think paid media in general is dead in a lot of ways, in magazines, especially in entertainment areas, be it cars or games or whatever. But yeah.
I think there's been enough. That's my upside is, I think, like, niches, like shit, like The Onion is apparently, that's not video games. The Onion is actually profitable now.
Yeah. So they bought Info.
Aftermath seems to be doing pretty well. I guess in the Australian ends, like, shout out to This Week in Video Games. They actually do some pretty good stuff. I'm like hoping they get to stick around.
Yeah. And yeah, it's an interesting place to be in that I know so many people that aren't doing it anymore just because it doesn't put food on the table.
Well, I mean, I was getting paid $100, $120 a page in Hyper, like, back mid-aughts. And now places are, like, offer you, like, $25, in which case I'm, like, going, yeah, I would, at least with Player 2, like, I know I like the people here. I'd rather do it for free than, like...
Yeah. I think my first feature was...
buy my lunch off a corporate.
My first feature was $500 for Hyper or something. So... like that was good money.
But it was adequate though. Like, it was
good
fair.
Money, especially as a side gig. You know, that's legit spending money. But yeah, not anymore. Anyway, on
literally, I'm not the $20 thing is not a hyperbole either.
No, like, no, it's not. I've seen like 10 cent a word or 5 cent a word quotes for 1,000 words, and you know,
see all. Yeah, you do it for a word without a word count. You're just encouraging me to, like, put shit writing out there. I'm just not going to trim that shit back.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, you can't tell these owners anything. Anyway, on that note, we will leave you and hopefully join you next time with a more positive topic.
Well, games will be coming out by the time we're recording the next one, probably.
Games.
We'll be, like, at the tip of the storm, I think.
Yeah. Tim, what have you been up to? Anything?
I don't... Well, I mean, I have a review key probably coming in around about the same time that this. You know what it is. I don't know if I can speak about it or not. I haven't actually read the email.
Yeah.
I know what it is.
You know what it is.
The key's probably going to arrive about the same time this episode goes live.
Yep.
Probably not going to play through the entire game and have a thing written.
Yeah.
You know, until a couple of weeks from now. But.
Yeah, that's fair. And pretend beard on the blue skies.
All right. And pretend beard on all of the things, mostly the blue skies. I probably still technically have a Twitter account, but...
No, I deleted mine.
It is. I tried to log in recently. I can't remember my password. If somebody wants to delete it for me and wants to guess the variation spelling and, like, big O's and letters, zeros and things of fuck you, Elon, I'm pretty sure that is the last thing my password was, some variation of that. If you could, like, just... You know, fucking just pretend to be if you want, but if somebody can just be tolerant enough to, like, figure out how I put that password in and delete the account for me, that would be awesome.
That'd be
but
awesome.
I literally don't care enough to the point where I'm willing to say what my last password on Twitter was.
and on my side of things, I will have a preview up on Star Wars Zero Company by the time this goes live. I'll also have a review for Marvel Token Fighting Souls coming. Which is, I mean, too long, didn't read, really fun fighting game. If you like Marvel vs. Capcom, you're going to like this.
I do like that they let the Japanese studio, like, do their own spin on the designs. Like,
oh, yeah.
It looks cool.
It's like, if you've seen Guilty Gear and go, those characters look cool, then, yep, this is Guilty Gear, but Marvel. Yeah, so it's coming up as well, and obviously we have a whole bunch of other things. We'll have a Pro Jank Footy review from Paul. Who else is going to do that? And a few other things popping up. which is like NBA Jam, but football, AFL. And yeah, head over to player2.net.au and check it all out. And we'll catch you. Oh, you can find me at Huso if you want to yell at me for whatever reason.
Yeah, you have just you don't need the 81 anymore, do you?
No, not anymore. No, just Huso. Back to the normal. And yeah, that's it for another week. We'll catch you next time.
Next time when all the games are going to be coming out.
All the games. So many games.
All it's
so many. It's fucking
stupid. Oh god, it's really stupid.
All because they're shit scared of Grand Theft Auto.